Episode 3,496 of the Survival Podcast, and that means we will not hit episode 3,500 this week. It'll happen next week. We may not hit episode 3,497. I haven't completely decided yet, but I'm really thinking about doing a rewind episode tomorrow and Thursday, a Friday flashback on Friday. I got to get out of here ass crack at dawn early, which is pretty damn early this time of year. To head on down to Bastrop on Thursday morning. It'd be good to have a whole day to take care of some things here on the homestead. So I may just work my ass off producing rewind and flashback content for the rest of today when I get done with this live stream. I ain't decided yet, but every minute that goes by, the more I feel that way. I worked out in my garden for about an hour this morning, and it was so pleasant. And I was just outside hanging out with my grandson and my wife and my granddaughter and the boys playing baseball and the little girls playing kitchen. Walk through my forest. And it's just gorgeous out there. And I know I only get so many days a year like this where everything's on the upswing and it's not, the sun's not trying to kill me yet. And additionally, I just need to always make sure when I'm gone and my wife has to take care of this place by herself and I have things in top working order. So if you wake up tomorrow and you find out in the middle of the day or early in the day that it's a rewind, that's why. Anyway, what are we going to talk about today? We're going to talk about financial strategies for the modern survivalist. This is a topic we haven't really hit as a standalone for quite a while. Now, we talk about money all the time, money management, investing. We have, of course, one of the best investment managers in the country, John Pugliano, on our expert council, et cetera. Because money's a survival topic. I whenever I talk to people and they tell me that money doesn't matter, I'll tell them that then they're one of two kinds of people. There are people don't have any money, and that's their way of making excuse for not having any money and barely surviving. Or there are people that have more money than they could ever need, but they didn't do anything for it. Someone handed it to them. Anybody that's worked their ass off for what they have and has actually achieved having something knows that money matters. In fact, that's the URL extension that I made for today's episode on the blog, thesurvivalpodcast.com/money-matters. So I do think that, you know, this is an absolute survival topic and we should talk about it. Probably as much or more than we already do. So today we're really going to break it down and come at money management and wealth building from a modern survivalist viewpoint. Before we do that, let's go ahead and hear from our sponsors of the day. Sponsor of the day number one today is Anton's Land of Biltong. Guys, I am so addicted to this stuff. I had hoped this week that when I did the segment on the live stream, I would have a Duor in my hand and I could eat it while I mocked you for not having one. Because last Wednesday, my shipment, my biweekly shipment, every 2 weeks I get a shipment from Anton, came in. And that was Wednesday. And this is Tuesday? It's 6 days. It's gone. I ate it. I'm not sorry. If you try some of this man's sausage and biltong, you will see why I take it as part of my sponsorship payment for him, from him. It is just, I mean, like I said, every Tuesday, every other Tuesday, because this Tuesday doesn't count. Dang it, I should have ordered some for myself for my trip down to Austin. Every other Tuesday, my mouth starts watering thinking about the fact tomorrow sometime that box will show up with a pound of regular biltong, a pound of Wagyu, I get a half pound of each of those every 2 weeks, and then I get a pound of the Duors. And the Duors are my thing I'm fiendish over. You need to try these. It translates from South Africans to dry sausage is basically what it means. But it's like no other dry sausage I've ever had. Give this stuff a try, and you will see why I love it so dadgone much. Next up today is Above Phone. Now, Above Phone is a way that you can start to take back your sovereignty from big technology systems. you can have a phone that doesn't track everything that you do. You can run apps that don't track everything that you do. And there's nothing that you do with your smartphone from AT&T or Apple or whatever, you know, T-Mobile, or that you can't do with an above phone. In fact, let's say you need an app, and that app is not something that you're happy with what's available in the private ecosystem app store, all open source and no tracking or anything like that. You need to use something from Google Play or Apple. What you do then is you create a little jail for it, and you put that app in that little jail, and then the jail says you're not allowed to do anything unless you're actively open and being used. So you can at least choose when and if you use those apps. But, Jack, I can't figure all this out. I'm not technical like you. I'm not as technical as you think I am. Above Phone will give you a one-hour phone consultation for free with the purchase of any phone. And the other thing, you know what? How about $75 off any phone in the Above Phone store? You'll get that if you're an MSB member as well. All right, now let's stick on into this. There's something started. A discussion in the live stream right here, and those of you listening to the audio can't see it, but I just think it's an interesting place to come from the beginning with this. There's a discussion about eating meat, and a person calling him John McAfee, and I don't know if that's just happened to be like there's people with the same names as famous people, or it's like a handle, I don't know which one, but basically he says plants equals slave food. I'd agree and I don't agree. Depends on what plants we're talking about and what they're paired with. But I will say that whenever you talk about a keto or a carnivore lifestyle on social media, people tell you they can't afford it. And then someone will show up and say, well, here's three things I eat all the time, and here's how they cost less than McDonald's. And then people will still make excuses as to why they can't do it. There's not enough, you know, variety or whatever, as though French fries and bread equal variety. But the only reason I even picked up on that to talk about it is so that we could move into my first talking points, which are the top four wealth killers. And the number one wealth killer of the four is what I call poverty consciousness. And I first experienced how bad it is, because you have to get away from it and then go back and look at it again to see it. When I was a young man, I was just out of the military. I had went into the Army. Spent my three-ish years there. I'd gotten out. I'd come home. I went back to my hometown in rural Pennsylvania, a place called Minersville. And you can imagine what the main industry is in a place called Minersville, except it's not anymore because it's all died off. And so that means the town died off a lot with it. And I saw it some, but I really couldn't explain it yet. And then I moved to Texas, and after about 10 years of living in Texas, we moved back to Pennsylvania. I took a job that brought me up there, and I got to spend some time in my hometown again. And when I went to a place called Dunkin' Donuts in the middle of the afternoon, taking a break from fishing at one of my old fishing holes, and I listened to people that were from, you know, young folks younger than me, middle-aged people that were my age at the time, and old people all saying the same shit over and over again. And the word that I heard most was cheaper. It's cheaper there. It's cheaper here. This is cheaper there. And don't go there. They're too proud of their pride. The whole conversation of probably a good 30 or 40 people in the middle of the day on a weekday, by the way, was about things costing too much money. And I understand how people feel things cost too much money right now with what's happened to inflation over the last 3.5 years. Thank you, Brandon. Though the Orange Man gets plenty of credit for a lot of money printing, too. But at the time, things were, those were the good old days. And I say that language even today. Like, when I hear people cheaper, 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 it's like cuss word to me. I don't think shit's a cuss word, but cheaper is when it was being used the way these people were. Another hallmark of poverty consciousness, and this is rampant where I grew up, must be nice. I've talked about that a lot, and I'll probably never stop talking about it until I die. You want to kill your ability to get wealth. You start using terms like must be nice. You see a dude driving down the road in a Corvette, you're like, must be nice. You'll never have one unless you win the lottery, and then you'll be poor in a couple, 3 years because you'll piss it away. You haven't learned anything yet. So number one thing we have to kill in our lives is poverty consciousness. When you think like a poor person, not only are you one, you will stay one. I can't tell you how many people that I've met in my life, and they tell you how rough they have and how little money they have. And you start talking to them, you find out they make a hell of a lot of money. They've just got it all spent before it comes in. That's an outflow, not an inflow problem. The number two wealth killer, and this is a big part of what leads to that, you have poverty consciousness. So you want to be wealthy, but you don't know how to be, and you're addicted to being poor, but you want to feel wealthy, so you buy shit. And that is consumer age thinking. Everything's now. Time preference is 1 week. If you get paid every 2 weeks, your time preference is 2 weeks. What can I do in the next 2 weeks, and then I'll have more money, and I can do something else? And there's no thought of next month, next quarter, next year, next decade. One of the hardest things in the world to do when you're, because this is what one of the reasons I don't mentor people. You get a 22-year-old wants mentorship. You start telling them about, hey, you need to be thinking about what life's going to be like for you when you're 42. Not 62, right? 62, you're getting damn close to, you know, an age a lot of people have retired or would at least like to retire soon, 65, 67. I understand it hard to see 40 years into the future when you're 22 years old, but 20 years, and this is something very hard to get people that age to see, and I know I didn't see it that well either. 20 years is this. It's so fast. The days are long, but the years are short. You guys that are young parents and all, hold on to that shit because it will be gone quicker than you know. But you have to be thinking about the next year, the next decade. You can't be thinking about tomorrow morning only, or you will squander what you have. And that consumer age thinking of just, it's one thing to buy stuff. I don't have a problem with buying stuff. I buy stuff all the time. The thing is that people are buying things to fill a void in their heart and their soul and their spirit. I'm not happy, but if I buy this thing, I'll be happy for a little while. It's generally not very long. When we shop, especially some of us are more predisposed to this, and I'm sorry, but I'm not sorry. Females tend to be more predisposed to this than males. Now, I'm saying males don't do it. We came up in society as hunter-gatherers, as human beings, as we evolved over time. And so when you're out picking berries, we've all experienced this, and there's some ripe berries, and there's almost ripe berries, and there's berries that are still green or whatever. But every once in a while, you see a berry that doesn't go in the container because it goes straight popped into your mouth, because the second you look at it, you know that it is at its absolute peak, and that if you don't eat it now, its quality can only go down after you pick it. It is that perfect, and when you do, you get this endorphin hit. When we shop, when we go, you know, walk the beach and pick up seashells, go gold collect, like all of these things of hunting things and finding things and then getting them, we've biologically evolved to have this endorphin hit. And if you're not aware of that, then shopping can destroy you. And I know many of you out there, that ain't me, Jack. Yeah, but is it? Well, all I'm suggesting is every time you're going to hit buy, and remember, I sell shit and I'm telling you this, right? Every time you're going to hit buy, say to yourself, will this benefit me more than just today? And if it's only today, do I have the money to be spending it this way? Because when I go out to eat with my wife and I order two really great margaritas with our dinner, and they're like 12 bucks a piece, and that's 24 bucks, it's only going to benefit me for a couple hours at the most. But I'm willing to do it, but I'm also not 21 and broke anymore. And so we have to think that way. Number three wealth killer, false optimism and or pessimism. There's nothing that will make a person piss away their wealth more than the belief, well, times will get better and I'll have more money. Sometimes that's true. Sometimes it's not. We'll get to false pessimism in a second. But the reality is, if all you're doing is believing it, but you're living your life the same way every day, it will never get better. You'll get your 1.5 to 3% raise, which inflation will eat 100% of it. So it's like nothing. Unless you're actively attempting to improve your situation, which is our main topic today, how to do just that, you're going to move backwards, not forwards, from a standpoint of wealth relative to income. Just as damaging and possibly more damaging is false pessimism, excessive pessimism. I'll never get anywhere. You got all these young people today. You know what? The TV said you'll never own a home. Their college professors and high school teachers said you'll never own a home. And they repeat like the NPCs that they are. We will never own a home. We will never own a home. You're not gonna. As long as you keep saying stupid fucking shit like that, you're not going to own shit. What are you supposed to say? I want somebody to tell me in the live stream right now before I spit it out, when you're sitting there, you're counseling a young person, you are a young person, and you're thinking about your housing situation and you're paying rent and you'd like to be a homeowner, instead of saying, I'll never own it, what should you be saying? Somebody please tell me I have not wasted 16 years of my life teaching y'all, and tell me what you should be saying in that situation. And the danger with pessimism is, unlike optimism, it has no limits. It has no limit. There's positively no limit on how far down you can send yourself mentally and emotionally. People tell you, like, optimism has no limits, right? Positive thinking has no limits, etc. Yeah, they do. There is a limit to how high anybody can go. No one is limited from the ultimate down, which is ending up dead. There is no limit to where negativity can take you. Somebody gave me the right answer. Two people now, three people, right? How can I? How can I is what you should be saying instead of I'll never. If you're saying I'll never, you're using the most loser language known to man. There's no way I can. I'll never. If you're like, I'll never travel at the speed of light and visit other planets, I can get on board with that. But if we're talking about something that millions of people do every year, figure out how to own a piece of property that you can live in, then you're just being a pussy. I didn't say it would be easy. I didn't say there would be no sacrifice. I didn't say you might have to not get drunk every Saturday night. I didn't say any of those things. I didn't say you might not have to take an extra job for a while. I didn't say you might have to shop really hard. I didn't say that you might not have to work extra hours, extra side hustles, et cetera, and put off for a while. I'm just saying there's an answer to that question. And you know what? Everybody knows there's an answer to that question. You know why they don't ask how can I? They don't want the answer, because the answer is uncomfortable. I'll throw a bonus in there. Number 3.5, an unwillingness to be uncomfortable. Number 4, wealth killer, though, envy and attempting to impress others. This kind of fits in with consumer age thinking, but it's different drive. The consumer age thinking is, what do I get? What do I get? What do I get? Where envy and attempting to impress others is, I want this thing so people will think more of me. I have to have a nice house, so when I invite my boss over once a freaking year and he says no, I look good. And this isn't new. This is the freaking samurai class in Edo, Japan, hundreds of years ago. The samurai were always worried that they didn't look good enough when their master came to their home. There's nothing new about that. We call it keeping up with the Joneses. We should call it keeping up with the Jones syndrome. My first fiance, who I never married, but the state of Texas decided we were married, and she sued me for divorce, which we had no assets. So it was just bitterness. A big part of why I made sure I got away from that relationship is she was all about that. Keep up with the neighbors. We have to look at least as good as our neighbors or better. And I don't want to live like a slob or nothing, but I'm not constantly going to be getting a new car because that's what's expected of me. I'm not joining, you know, a golf club that I don't even want to play the game so that I can look right. And those four things, poverty consciousness, consumer age thinking, false optimism and pessimism, and envy and attempting to impress others, are the number one reason people in this country aren't wealthy. Because the truth is, we should have more millionaires and billionaires per capita than any other place in the world. We should. And not just because everybody's house due to inflation is worth $500,000. There's more opportunity right here for all the shit they screwed up than there is anywhere else in the world. And there's more opportunity right now for a person starting with basically nothing to become wealthy, even doing a blue-collar job for their whole working career. than there ever has been in the world infinity. Well, back when 1974, one interest rates were 18% on a fucking mortgage, one man could take care of his whole family. Bitch, then why the fuck, I'm just sorry, I'm so tired of this bullshit. Why the fuck is my generation called the latchkey kids if that's true? If the fucking boomers had dad working, six kids, and dad took care of everything, then why did all their fucking kids, because Gen X is the child generation of the boomers, why the fuck did we raise ourselves? Why the fuck do we know exactly the difference in the taste of hose water at 10 in the morning versus 3 in the afternoon after it's been in the sun longer? How do we know that? Because that is a fucking wonderful fiction. That's why. Because that shit didn't happen. Now, were there more women that were stay-at-home moms in the 1980s than there are today? Yeah, but it wasn't normal. It wasn't regular. It wasn't what they told you in your freaking economics class that might as well be called wokeism bullshit. Because we were the latchkey kids. I raised myself. My contemporaries, we all raised ourselves. When you watch all those movies about the, in the 80s, in the 70s, and kids are riding around on their bikes everywhere, and they're gone for 8 hours a day, and their parents never even wonder where they are, that shit actually happened. Do you know why? Because most of us came from families where both parents worked. It is bull fucking shit, and you are in poverty consciousness with it. You're using it as an excuse to make Eeyore arguments. It'll never work. It was easier when you were coming up. Fuck, it doesn't matter if it was easier anyway. You have what you have. You know, when we learn about things like gunfighting, everything is my responsibility. That's how all fucking life is like that. All right, moving on. We need to talk about something else too, briefly, because I got a lot of bullet points today. Debt is fucking cancer. Debt is cancer. Now, I'm going to talk about owning a home today. You're probably going to do that with a mortgage. Is the mortgage cancer is debt? It depends. So, when I say debt is cancer, I'm talking about leveraging money against a declining asset without a way that that asset draws income in the time that it's declining. And that income draw could be, I bought a car, it's a declining asset, but I can easily afford the payment and it takes me to work and back every day. And if I didn't have a fucking car, I couldn't get to work. Now, maybe you could get by with a beater, but I understand that math, if you do it right with Excel, will work. It will check out. How much money does this car make me over 5 years, 6 years, 8 years, 10 years, depending on how long you have it? Based on the fact that it's a conveyance system, it takes me to work and back every day, and these are the expenses against that, and it's part of my business. Even if you're employed, you have a business. And if you started treating it like one, you might actually make more money and get more opportunity out of it and keep more of what you make. So a car is okay debt. House. What is a house? If you maintain your house, you have to pay to live somewhere. Its value increases over time and you build equity in it. You can also rent it to another person and turn it into an income generating asset. Those are different classifications of debt. If you're running a line of credit to operate a business and you know what the fuck you're doing, then it can be one of the best ROIs you can have. Instead of investing your money in your business, you invest somebody else's money in your business, right? With fixed terms. So those are different things. Those are appreciating assets, or they are income generating assets. Your television set does not generate you fucking income. Okay? It doesn't generate you income. So if you go out and you buy the latest and greatest 97,000-inch TV and you put it on a credit card with a 22% interest rate, you are stupid. That is cancerous debt. We need to stop measuring debt in dollars and start measuring in time. When you go somewhere and it says it's only $20 a month, for how fucking long? Assuming you don't miss one payment and all of a sudden the interest rate doesn't quadruple or some shit. So debt is cancer. It needs to be treated like cancer. And how much cancer do you want? Are you like, a little bit of cancer? You don't want any. So stay away from financing depreciating assets with no direct ROI possible from them. Treat it like what it is. It's cancer. It's think of like even that little bit of debt. You know, that $200 set of tools, if you ain't got the money, I don't care if Jack recommended it's on sale. Don't buy it. If you can't pay it off, you get credit card to buy it because you get points back or whatever. I don't beat up on people for that anymore. It is what it is. I have a credit card too because they won't let me rent a fucking car for shit anymore without it. But if you're going to use that, if you can pay it off at the end of the month, same as cash, I don't care. But if you can't do that, don't buy it. Even if it's on sale and I told you it was a good deal, don't fucking buy it. Get rid of the debt. Look at it like this. Somebody took a cigarette and dipped it in cancer sauce and then told you to smoke one a day for the rest of your life. You probably wouldn't do that. If you do, you deserve what you get. Moving on. Saving is more important for investing for people, especially in the beginning. It amazes me how people, I'm trying to decide between investing in this and that. How much money do you have to invest? $800. Okay, so you have $0 to invest. You don't have any money to. If you're looking at it now, if it's $800 of like risk capital and you're just starting a new thing, that's not what I mean. Like, how much money do you have invested right now? Or, you know, this money plus that $800, you need a savings account. Maybe you need to start buying some Bitcoin. We'll get to that later. But you need to be saving, because if you invest in a mutual fund that gives you a 10% ROI this year, that's all good and well, but it's $80. You could have shut the fuck up, put your money in savings, taken your ass out and did DoorDash every weekend and made $800 a month instead of $80 for the year. Start accumulating the cash. This is something that I'm going to explain to you. This is going to be, well, it's going to be difficult to understand unless you want to understand it, because it's actually dramatically simple. Everything I'm going to give you today is simple. There's not a thing I'm going to give you today that you cannot take, adopt into your life, and figure out how to implement. Not fucking one. All of it is simple. But none of it's easy. If it was easy, I wouldn't have to tell you to do it, because we all do what's easiest unless we have discipline in our lives. Like, if the way to get rich was eat ice cream, shit 3 times a day, and lay around on your ass, everybody would be rich. It's simple, but it's also easy. Foregoing something you really want to have something you want more later, that's simple. There's nothing difficult about not spending money on something that you don't need anyway. I understand you got to pay your electric bill. I get that. But not buying this ice cream cone today, which is what your Starbucks is, by the way. If you go to Starbucks every day and you bitch to me about money, I will tune you out so fast I can't even. It's like you were from a time in the past and you never existed. You're from an alternate reality to me. I don't even care about your existence. And Starbucks is just a convenient example. But if you're spending $6 to $8 a day on fucking coffee that's worse for you than Coca-Cola, I don't want to hear you bitching about money. And I know I got some young people out there pissed off at me right now. Yeah, I know what it's like. Yes, I do. We were all broke. Again, your fucking college professors and shit lied to you. The TV lied to you. TikTok influencers lied to you. We didn't have it really any easier than you do. When you are 20 years old, unless you have rich parents who give you shit, you are young and fucking broke. And I hate to tell you, but you're stupid. And you're not stupid like you're not intelligent. You're stupid in that you don't have enough life experience to understand that what I'm telling you right now is the truth. Do you know how all of us that are older than you that built successful lives know that? Because we used to be 20 and fucking stupid too. And so when we're talking to you, you can either say, listen, this asshole has lived more than 30 years longer than me. He sits in his room every day and podcasts. He makes more money than a lot of like primary care doctors. He's set for life and he's still teaching because he loves it and it's a passion of his. Maybe he's not lying to me. Maybe I can do better than him because I can start earlier, since he was a dumb fuck when he was 20 and he's telling me at 20 what to do. Maybe I should act like he's telling himself what to do at 20. Because that's what I'm doing. I'm giving you the advice no one gave me or I was too stupid to comprehend when I was 20. And this advice applies to you if you're 40, 50, 60. But the younger you are, the longer you have to run this out and make something out of it. But next, I want to kind of give you a concept to relate to this. I love to use analogies when I'm teaching. So we're talking about alternative energy, but not as an investment, as an analogy. There's two ways to look at alternative energy. And one is, you know, the dream, living off grid and all. But if you really want to make the most out of what we call alternative energy, solar power or wind, whatever, geothermal, the first thing you do is you start with your efficiency. It doesn't make any sense to go spend a bunch of money on solar panels, $20,000, let's say, to put an array up on your roof to cut your electric bill. By the way, then you need that Excel thing to tell you how much energy that is, what your cost of energy, what's your ROI on time, and what's the life cycle of the system. That's a separate thing. That's $20,000. You know, it is likely that if you have an older home, you could go and not even replace your windows, but in seeing to the efficiency of your windows and doors and your seals, pulling some stuff off and maybe putting in, you know, expanding foam where there's leakage, get a thermal gun for $18 and walk around and find the places that heat's leaking out, cold's getting in, heat's getting in, et cetera. Find out what's wrong and fix all that. That can do way more for you than $20,000 worth of solar panels. So we start there. Make things as efficient as possible, right? Then we begin to reduce losses, right? In that we start to take and build out that alternative infrastructure so that we have less money going to the power company from what we still need after we've increased efficiency. How does that relate to income? Number one, efficiency is increased income. So the easiest thing that anybody can do to improve their self financially is to make more money. How? I don't know. That's up to you. You have your own tolerance, things you're willing to do, your own opportunities around you. If you live in a city like Dallas, Fort Worth, or Atlanta, or Tallahassee, or Philadelphia, and you say you don't have money, but you have a car, and you're not doing DoorDash or Amazon deliveries or something like that, or something else, I don't want to fucking hear it. I don't want to hear it, because unless you're working 80 hours a week, I don't want to, and if you are, you probably are complaining you don't have any money. Because you've taken care of the second part, which is too much spending because you're too busy working to spend money, right? So you need to be doing everything you can to make every dollar that you can and setting your future while you're doing that. What people don't understand is when people take second jobs, do side gigs, whatever, every single person you meet is expanding your Rolodex, to use an old man phrase, right? Your Rolodex, your contact database, your contact list on your phone, Gen Zs. Every single person that's in your phone is of value to you at some point in your life. And hopefully you're not a leech, so you're of value to them. You see how that works? So it's not just about making more money. It's about meeting more people, finding more opportunity that way. When I was young, one thing I did get right, if I had the job and there was another place that would hire me and that place would pay me $2 an hour more, I'll walk across the street for it. The other thing I did, and this is a little bit of a different mindset, you got to get to where you have enough income and built enough stability to be able to do this. When I got to a point in the job where I realized if I stay here for another 20 years, I might make some more money, get promoted, but I ain't going to learn nothing else. Fuck that. I'm out of there. I want to go somewhere and learn something else. I want a new network and I want a new skill set. But that's a different piece. But what you have to do is increase income. And then the second part is reduce spending. So most people start with reducing spending, and the problem with that is a lot of times there's not a lot other than the stupid spending, there's not a lot to reduce. You know, if you go and get a better cell phone plan, it saves you $10 a month. It's $10 you didn't have, but it would have been easier to make an extra $100 and save 10. There's only so much you can cut. So cut the stupid first, cut the easy first, which is exactly the last thing people do. As a marketer, I always wanted to sell things people wanted versus what they need. If you sell needs, you compete with the giant global corporations and they make 2% and they're happy to because they measure their sales in tens of billions of dollars. You sell what people want, you measure your profit in hundreds of percentiles of markup. And people will cut what they need by finding a cheaper provider before they'll think about cutting what they want. because we're a pleasure-driven species. You have to reverse that, or at least know what you're doing. If you're spending money, you really don't have to, but really you get a lot of pleasure out of it, and it's not damaging your body, damage your life in the future. Just know what you're doing. So here's my rules. I have a bunch of rules for you for becoming financially resilient. And when I say rules, I said rules, not laws. You want to follow what I teach. You want the success that I've built for myself. I followed these rules, and that's how I got here. You don't have to follow them all. You don't have to follow any of them. But if you don't, you probably won't be anywhere different than you are right now. Number one, you need to increase your financial IQ daily for at least a year minimum. And all I mean there is that if I say something like KPI, you should know what the fuck it means, even if you never use it. And if you don't, go look it up right now. Find out what KPI is. Or COGS. I'll give you that one. COGS is cost of goods sold. That's how I'm going to figure out how much I charge for anything. The first thing I need to know is what the cost is. And I don't mean that the company in China that's drop shipping it for me, you know, charges me $15 for it. What is the cost to deliver that product to Builder of Castles here in the live chat? The total landed cost. Everything that I do, every bit of effort I put into it, including the value of my labor. And then I mark up from there. That's a financial IQ thing. When I sit down with my accountant every year, she's incredibly useful and helpful to me, but she's a better accountant because I'm a better client. Because I'll go to her and say, well, look, I got this thing over here, and I think we can expense it if we do it this way, and here's what I found that says we can do that. And she'll go, yeah, but we should call it this instead, and here's how we're going to place it and put it, right? So by being more financially astute, I can have that conversation with my accountant, and that puts literally thousands of dollars back into my pocket every year. Just the ability to do that. When somebody brings a business to me, this is one of the ways I make them go the fuck away, right? What's your landed cost of that product to a customer? They don't know. Or they say, well, I can get it for $15. Well, yeah, but what's your landed cost? What are all your other expenses in delivering that product to the customer? What's your forecast for sales? They have a business that's operating. What is your cost per customer acquisition cost? What is your conversion rate? I sell 20 products. I can't have it. You have one for every product. You also have an aggregate average. And it amazes me, even some people that are a little bit okay with their success in business, I don't know any of this shit. They're successful in spite of it. And there's an easy way to do this, just knowing what words mean. Because when you know what the word means, you get exposed to the concept. When it comes to investing, what's a short and what's a long? What's put in a call? Right? What is a collared trade? Even if you don't ever do any of it. You know how many people that, well, I think it's stupid to short Bitcoin. I don't even know what shorting means. Yeah, and do you know that shorting is not always the same length of time? It's not just a time thing? I'm not going to tell you what any of this shit is, but I will tell you a resource. Investopedia has a daily financial term of the day newsletter. All it is every day you get an email, it gives you a word and a summary definition you can click to read like a brief article, 4 or 5 chapters on it. Now, I will tell you, when you subscribe to that letter, it's going to come up pre-selected with a bunch of other shit to email you with. You can deselect it or do nothing, but if you click another button, you're going to get on like 5 emails from them instead of 1. But that financial term of the day email is brilliant because it drips knowledge on you. It just drips knowledge on you. You just learn a new term every day. You learn about 300, you get weekends off, right? So 300 new financial terms and hence all the concepts that go with them a year. And the other thing is I found that the people over at Investopedia have their finger on the pulse of the world pretty good. And when you start seeing certain terms show up that indicate things like banks being in distress, it's not a coincidence a couple weeks later when you have a bank collapse. I'm just saying. moving on, you need to treat education like an investment if that's what you think it is. Because most people do not treat education as an investment. So what they do, spending bad, investment good. Right? That we just learn that. They just teach you that, but they don't teach you what an investment is. So now if we call it an investment, then it must be good to spend money on it. But the person can't even define what an investment is or explain how the spending is an investment. Or they say something like, well, the nice guidance counselor and all my teachers and the guy that came to school to talk to us on career day all said that if I get a degree, I'll make more money. A degree in what? And make more money than doing what? And are you a good candidate for this? Because when we have no skin in the game directly out of the gate, we tend to say yes to shit that we shouldn't. Number one way to get somebody to buy something, zero down and no payments for 60 days. How about zero down and no payments for 4 to 5 years? That's a good way to get somebody to spend $150,000 that's going to cost them $750,000 if they pay it off ever in their life on something with no return whatsoever because they end up schlepping coffee at Starbucks for people that can't afford it and helping other people get type 2 diabetes. I'm sorry. It's the way it is. That's what that is. So if you want your education to be an investment, you need to put that shit into an Excel spreadsheet. What is the average income of a person with this education? What is my plan for this education? What is the average income of a person for this with this education at 1 year, 5 years, and 10 years? How long is it going to take to pay back based on these expected income streams? What percentage of people that have this degree or this career path work in their career for the rest of their lives? Which percentage of them work in that career ever? If you look at a career field, not really a career field, like a degree, and 10% of people with that degree are working directly in their field, it's probably not an investment. It's probably something to do for 4 years with somebody else's money, not realizing you're going to have to pay it back. When you, any education, what are you going to do with the result? If it's just, if you're going to treat it as an entertainment expense, that's fine, assuming it's not that expensive. But even like my course on composting, if you're not going to make compost, I guess there's some intellectual knowledge there that you can use and other things. But really, you should be looking at what is, if I take Jack's $40 compost course and I spend another $60 on materials and build 2 bioreactors, and at the end of that, I have, let's say, 2/3 of a yard of this incredible compost. What's the value of that? And how much am I going to do that for the rest of my life? And what I'm going to do with it? And if I'm going to grow food with it, what's the value of the food that comes out the other end? That seems relatively easy to do with one of my courses, doesn't it? That's because it's an actual education. If you can't do that with something, it's not an education. Because I do believe education is investment. But if there's not an output, if there's not some value beyond the cost, that's not an investment. That's a loss. It's pissing your money away. The next, reduce your expenses in small ways. It's not really that hard to do. And that just means look everywhere in your life and say, well, I can save $5 here, $10 there, $15 there, $2 here. And then when you figure that out and you discipline yourself to it, remember that you were surviving without the extra money prior to making the cuts. So take at least half of the money that you've saved and save it. Take it from saved to savings. Yeah? Really simple. So if you figure out, I figured out this month how to cut my expenses by $50. At least another $25 should go into whatever savings or investments that you're making. At least. I say put it all in there, but I'm also like willing to admit that when you have more of what you want in your life and less of what you don't want, you're likely to stay on track and do better. So if this month you cut it by 50 and take an extra 25 for fuck off money, and next month you weasel out another 15, you say, I'm going to throw $8 more into savings and take 7 of it for me. And you keep working that process over time. By the end of the year, you might end up with several hundred dollars more being invested into your future and several hundred dollars more a month for the things that you want, not just the things that you need. Or to make better decisions about the things that you need, buying higher quality. We'll get to that too. But you also need to save money and determine what you can save and then do a bit more. Before you're even worried about saving money by reducing expense, how much can you save? Do you know how many people I know who tell me they don't have money? I said, where's your budget? And they're like, I don't have a budget. Well, fuck, of course you don't have money. You don't have a grown-ass adult without a budget. How many young couples I've talked to, the wife spends money like crazy, goes shopping as a sport, doesn't have a budget. You talk to them and say, I think you guys should have a budget. And the wife says, and sometimes it's the husband's the spender. I'm just saying it's more typical I run into it's the wife, but spending on random crap. Men tend to waste money on other shit, not shopping every day. They buy larger ticket, less frequent things they don't need to spend money on, like the 800th gun in their collection. I'm talking about myself there. Right? You know, there's points where you get to where you can do stuff like that, but we tend to waste money too in different ways. But it's women who give me the most pushback. Sorry if you don't like it. It's just true. When I say y'all need a budget, oh, you just don't want me to spend any money. I never said that. What I said is I want you, as a grown-ass fucking woman, to look at your income as a household and figure out how much fucking money you get to piss away a month, commit to that number, and don't spend it all. And they can't do it. They don't want to do it because the endorphin hit that we started off with, the consumer thinking is, but I won't have. No understanding that, but if you do this, you'll really have more. You won't sit 2 days before payday like, shit, I don't know what I'm going to do anymore. Because if you come down to that, and you're less likely to since you've budgeted your fucking income anyway, right? But if you come down to that, you have a reserve you can tap into. We all have to have reserves. It's called being a prepper. Next, you should be creating additional income. Business, second job, more hours. I know people like this too. You look at what they do and you're like, fuck, that's so. I know people with artistic talent. And I'm like, put that shit on Etsy. Right? Like, make a bunch of shit up that you're doing anyway. Take pictures of it. Learn how Etsy works. Put it on Etsy. What if nobody buys it? What if fucking Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny come beat your ass tonight? Like, what if? Like, that is like, that's another term that losers use. Take this shot at improving your life, but what if it doesn't work? What the fuck have you lost? You'll learn how to set up an Etsy shop. You'll learn how to take good pictures. And if it doesn't work, instead of saying, well, it doesn't work because nobody wants these things, go see if anybody else is selling shit like them successfully. What are they doing that you're not? Do that shit and learn. What if everything, you want to go, what if everything in life, if you tried it one time and it didn't work, you never tried it again? How many of you people, the first time you asked somebody on a date, they told you to go fuck yourself? What if you never asked for a date again? How many of you, when you did ask for a date enough times, somebody said yes, and you went out with somebody a couple times, and they seemed all right, and then you're like, this relationship sucks. So you ended it. What if you said, well, what if I have another relationship that sucks? I'm never going to have a relationship again. And you get to die old and alone. How many things in your life that you did the first time they actually worked? Well, the first time you were a little kid and you took a basketball and tried to make a basket, did it fucking go in? I bet it didn't even hit the net, let alone the rim. First time you ever got up with a baseball bat in your hand, took a swing at a ball, and somebody slow pitched your ass, I bet you missed it. I tell my granddaughter this all the time. She gets frustrated with a math problem because it's a new thing she has to learn. The first time you ever did a one-handed cartwheel, you probably fell on your ass. What if is the biggest loser language pile of shit unless you're using it to point out how stupid it is? What if only factors in when the answer to it is, well, then you die or then you go bankrupt? If the answer isn't some completely catastrophic result, if the answer is then I wasted 3 hours learning something I didn't know how to do and you're using what if, you want to be fucking poor. You hate money. I say that all the time. Don't hate money, because if you hate money, money will hate the fuck out of you. Money will flee from you. Money seeks the hand of a good master. Money flees from the fool. It runs away. You can pour money into the house of a fool. I mean, a faucet of money in there. Walk away, come back in 60 days, and then they're more poor than they were before you poured the money in the household. Stop hating money. We need, Survivalizer says, I am Survivalizer and hate money, right? I hate money. We almost need a 12-step program for this, like Alcoholics Anonymous or, Drug Addicts Anonymous or something, right? My name is Jack Spirko and I hate money. I admit my problem and I need to be cured. My step one is, right? Like, we need a program for, like, so many people. All you have to do is step back 10 feet and watch the way they behave and go, this person hates money. And sometimes they look like they have money, but they really don't. They're back to the number three wealth killer, right? False optimism. And the number four wealth killer, envy and keeping up with the Joneses. Right, Spenders Anonymous, right? It's worse than spending, though. If spending was only one problem, it wouldn't be that bad. It's a lack of initiative to gain more income and spending money they don't have and a complete mental state that involves destroying wealth on a constant basis. Every decision that you make has an impact on your future. And some piece of that impact is your wealth in the future. Would you go back in time and kick the shit out of yourself at some point? And if you're 30 or older and you don't have a yes answer to that, you ain't thought hard enough yet. If you can't look back and say, maybe it's not a single purchase. Maybe it's this repeated thing you did over time. If I had just not done this thing twice a week for 10 years of my life and took that money and did something else, would I be better off? If you wouldn't go back and kick your own 22-year-old ass, you got work to do. You need to go to, I Hate Money Anonymous or whatever. Stop hating money. Additionally, you need to save money. And I mean in cash. For all the talk of inflation, I've never wavered on this. Some of your money should be in dollars. Or if you live in Europe, euros. If you live in Canada, Monopoly Canadian money or whatever it is, the pesos, rupees, rubles, wherever you live. Queen's Heads in Australia because they still own your ass or whatever it is. You should own some of that capital in cash. Cash is king. Cash is the opportunity fund. Cash is when the car manufacturers freak out about a common cold that's worse than normal. Because we call it a pandemic and shut down half of society, and they sell a car for half its worth, and you walk in and go, I'll take one in blue, which is what I really did. That's savings that allows that. The inflation that eats away at that piece of savings, because that's not all your savings, but the inflation that eats away at that, that's like a lease payment on opportunity cost. Because if I have my money tied up in investments and the opportunity comes, and that investment's way down right now, and I liquidate it at a loss, I've lost money. I hate money. If it's way up right now, and I liquidate it prior to my actual plans for it, and I have to pay capital gains on it, that means I risked my wealth and turned around and gave the government 25% of it. I also hate money. Cash is the money that I can just spend, and I don't care what form it's in. It can be in a strong box buried in your floor. It can be in a CD in a bank account. It can be anywhere, but you should have some cash on hand. And that should build up over time to a point where, like, that money could cover at least 90 days of your life. That's when you can really start to invest in earnest. I actually disagree with, like, Dave Ramsey on that. I think you should start investing in savings at the same time, but you should wait it towards savings until you're at that 90 days and then push all the money into long-term thinking. And remember, investing is your education when it's done right. It's your tools. It's a backyard system that produces food. It's a mutual fund. It's Bitcoin. It's silver. It's all things that have an appreciation of value across time or a cash flow of some sort across time. My garden does not have a cash flow in that I don't run a market garden and sell my food at a food stand. That would be a direct cash flow. This is what's called an indirect cash flow. So go to the grocery store right now and buy a single grocery bag full of produce that you could have grown yourself and see what it costs you. Let's say that's $50 a week. And let's say your growing season like mine is 9 months. Well, that's $200 a month, 9 months, $1,800 in cash flow. To eat better food, be healthier, and have something positive in your life that occupies your time and energy, and you don't spend it pissing away money on things you don't need and shouldn't have. So you're healthier, wealthier, and wiser for having a garden. So we'll talk about that more. But that's just one example of how to see things as investments that are a little bit different. You also need to strive to become, we talked about this earlier, but become a land or a homeowner on some level. Like I said, I got a whole generation right now, really a generation and a half, younger millennials into Gen Z, all walking around like fucking Eeyore the donkey from Winnie the Pooh. It'll never work. I'll never own a home. Nobody in my generation can afford to own a home. And the guy they went to school with is buying one while they're bullshitting about it on TikTok, saying no one can do it. Do you know how many people every year that are 28 years old are buying houses and you're not? But you want to make yourself feel good, so you just say it's impossible. You know that old saying, if you think you can or you think you can't, either way, you're right. To a degree, that is true. It seems like an oversimplification. There isn't a person out there right now, let's say 22 years old. I believe this. You're 22 years old. And you set a goal that by 28, you'll be a homeowner. That's 6 years. And you direct your primary intention in your life to becoming a homeowner intelligently. Because there's a lot of people that'll do it, and they'll end up buying houses that are going to decline in value. They're going to get their ass wiped out, whatever. Now, I mean, you'll find a house that you can afford with debt you can service, and you have the money going in that you need to do it right. You got 6 years to fucking shop and figure out where you want to live. There isn't a person that can't do it. There isn't a person that can't do it. There's 90% of them that won't, but there isn't anybody that can't. The reality is that we get in life that which we put the most effort into obtaining. And what most people put the most effort into obtaining is short-term feel good. They get plenty of it. What if you put that effort into becoming wealthy? And then home ownership is only one piece of that. It's amazing how much effort people put into doing shit and then say they can't have the things they really want. Well, the thing, reality is your actions have dictated that which you really want. Right? What would you think of somebody that says, I really want to jump in that pool right now, and they're not wired with electronics or something, and it's not 15 degrees below zero. It's a nice summer day. They're wearing a bathing suit. And they say, I really want to be in that pool right now, but I can't do it. You'd probably get sick of hearing it after about three times and throw the fucker in the pool, right? But if you want in the pool, you got to jump in the pool. Well, if you want a pool in your own backyard, you got to do the work to get the pool in your backyard. And if you want an in-ground, really nice spa pool with waterfalls and shit like my nephew has, it will take more effort than an above-ground pool like I have, because I only value my pool so much. But see, both myself and my nephew, right, made our decisions for ourselves based on what we wanted. He wanted a really badass pool because they used it in their business for photo shoots. And I wanted a pool that made my wife happy that didn't cost me an arm and a leg, and I didn't want to use dynamite to put one in the ground. And as long as you understand the decision you're making, you're going to end up okay. And if owning a home is something you want to do, and it should be, then that's the direction you should take. And it amazes me how many people pay more in rent than they could actually buy a house for if they put 6 years into down payments and smart shopping. But they'll tell you they can't do it. You should put some money into silver and gold. I believe that is a good investment. For all the shit that I give Peter Schiff, it's only because he's an asshole liar. He ain't wrong about the underlying value of things like silver and gold. And, of course, he's all in on gold. I like silver a bit better for most people. I don't believe in the whole buy the thing you get more ounces of. I believe in the divisibility of silver and the flexibility with liquidation. And what I mean by that is you can sell a certain amount of American Silver Eagles every year and pay no tax on them, even if you've made five times on your money. I think it's 30 a year or something like that. And you can also sell any silver in any pawn shop and sell like $450 worth of it. And you just sell it, they give you $450 and you leave. And you might be surprised at how many different pawn shops you could do that over time if you needed to liquidate that. And then I'm just saying maybe no one reported anything to the government and you figure it out from there. Where if you have gold and you have an ounce of gold, you're 1099 the minute that you exchange that. Now, the value of gold is if I need to go somewhere and I need to take a lot of wealth with me, you know, the amount of gold that I could fit hidden inside a belt buckle probably finance my life for 6 months. Living okay, let alone living, you know, rationed and then figuring out what to do when I get where I'm going. So both of them have their place. Both of them have their place. But I kind of look at the 5 to 10% of net wealth as a target. I'm not saying take 5% of your net wealth today and go out and buy Silver Eagles. I'm saying over time, kind of build up to that 5% of net wealth. And that net wealth is growing while you're stacking that silver. Of course, Bitcoin. I honestly think the majority of your surplus capital, and that means money that you know you probably won't need to spend for at least 5 years, should go into Bitcoin right now. Why? It's the number one returning asset in the world over the last 15 fucking years. There's no number two when you have a clear number one. You don't want to do it? I do all entire shows on Bitcoin. You want to tell me they're going to turn off the internet or some other stupid shit? Where, by the way, all of you that do that, you can turn off the internet one day and you're not going to be able to use Bitcoin. You're fucking dead if that happens. I know the people that make that excuse. I know you're the same fucking people that when I tell you to put a garden in, you're like, you know, let me put a garden in. Because if I put a garden in, when the shit hits the fan, people are just going to steal my tomatoes. Shut the fuck up. Really. I'm sorry. And I know some of you get really upset when I talk that way, but it's reality. Like, if you don't want to buy Bitcoin, you don't want to buy Bitcoin, but don't make up bullshit excuses. Don't sit there with a bank account, right? Don't sit there with a fucking job that is dependent upon the internet and everything working. Don't sit here and live in a society that could not function without the internet. Don't sit here and live in a society that could not function without the internet that would be set back 100 years without the internet. That the people that you're worried about make all their money from and use that as an excuse because you sound fucking stupid, right? You sound stupid to anybody, and we know what you're doing. You're coming up with an excuse instead of saying, I don't understand the investment, so I'm not ready to invest in it yet. You tell me that, I shut up. You make up excuses like, you're betting on a light switch. I don't have time for your nonsense. But that's where I think the majority of your surplus capital should go right now. If not there, then you tell me where. And I'm going to tell you the other side of this. Most of the people that, you're going to turn off the internet or you're trusting it to a light switch or some other stupid shit, they're going to ban it. It's going to go to zero. They just approved a fucking ETF run by the largest financial company in the world for it. But most of you, the reason you say that is you don't have any surplus capital because you ain't done all this other shit. It's moot at this point. Or in the words of Joey Tribbiani, it's a moot point. A moot point. It's like a cow's opinion. It just doesn't matter. If you don't know that one, you'll have to look it up. Okay. But you should be able to get it. Become a producer of food. Like I just talked about, it's really easy to produce $200, $300, $400, $500 worth of food a month with a garden and a little backyard flock of chickens or ducks or something like that. And if you can do that, why wouldn't you? Now, I understand not everything's for everybody. I was going to put that on the screen. That might be the best scene from that series of all time. My wife and I joke about it all the time. And if you're on audio only, I'm not even going to tell you what it is. I will tell you on the video. It's at 1 hour, 4 minutes, and 12 seconds is where you will find it. But I love that joke. That is freaking – we move shit. And one of us will say it, and the other one says it back, and then we start laughing. It's a joke with my son. Yeah. Now I lost, but yeah, food, produce food. Yeah, why wouldn't you? Now, as I say, not everybody should do everything in food production. You can automate a garden to where you can leave for 2 weeks. You can't really automate your chickens that way. We're getting some tech where we might be able to do that. I just had the stock cropper guy on, and we may be able to get to where at least a week, you know, your birds can keep functioning and you don't have to worry about it. But birds, animals hold you on a property. There's a sacrifice there. Quail can be automated for easy, leaving for a weekend, easy, really a full week. There's a lot of things you can do to produce food for yourself. Aquatic systems are inherently automated to begin with, right? So think about some way you can turn on food production off of the asset you already have, which was that ever wherever you live. I can't garden. I had a guy tell me the other day, I love all your gardening stuff, but I don't think I garden. I live in an apartment on a second floor. Only thing I have is a patio. How big is your, and my response was, how big is your patio? 8 foot by 12 foot facing south. I almost didn't answer because I knew I was dealing with somebody just, well, just say you don't want to. Why are you reaching out to me and telling me you can't do a thing that you could do if you wanted to do it? I gave him some advice. I sent him a video of Bill Mollison setting up a garden on a patio. On a smaller patio than that. 8 foot by 12 foot patio, south facing, second floor, garden railing, trellis capability. Don't tell me. Now, are you going to produce enough food to live off of? No. But you can produce the most expensive produce you're buying. Most expensive produce you buy by weight is leafy greens that are fast turn, heavy profit product. Things like that, green onions and cilantro. Like, there's so much you can do. Then go buy good quality cheap beef and live a better life and cut your medical expenses. You'll have even more money, and eventually you can get the fuck out of that apartment. I want to actually share an analogy that I came up with to try to help a friend of mine when I was still a teenager. It was this girl, and she was dating this guy, and I was not scamming on her. She was not a girl I wanted to date. But the guy that she was dating was a sponge. And she was a little older than me. She was actually out of school. She had a job. I was 17, I guess. She was probably 19. And this guy was like a loosely associated friend of mine. Like, I could get along with the guy, but I didn't want to hang out with him, even back then when I was a dumbass. And I said to her, I said, you got to think about it like this. You have a junk shit car and you have four shitty bald tires. If you hit a pebble, you're going to have a flat, and your spare is bald as shit too. But you also have on top of your car a whole bunch of baggage that's this fucking guy. The first thing you need to do, since that car barely moves down the road, is get rid of the fucking baggage. Now the car will move. Now you can actually get the fuck to work, earn your money, and you can move the car up and down the road. Well, in time, you'll be able to buy better tires, maybe used ones at first, that will make the car even better so you can do more work and make more money. And eventually, you can get rid of that car and get a brand new car. But until you get rid of the baggage, the car can't do anything for you. And by the way, the car is your life. And she didn't, because we're all stupid when we're around 20 years old. I was good at giving advice. I wasn't necessarily good at following it. Don't think I was that great or nothing. But that story still rings true to me. I see so many people, that's exactly what I feel like. You got some sort of baggage holding you back. It could be a negative attitude. It could be belief that the man wants to keep you down. It could be whatever it is. But you need to identify and jettison the baggage. Get the car moving, put new tires on the car. I've actually told that story to probably hundreds of people over the year, and I'm going to bet over the years, and I'm going to bet 1% to 2% got it enough to do something with it. Moving on, plant trees. I don't think there's a greater investment a man can make than to plant trees whose shade under which they know they shall never sit, in the words of the Greek proverb. When you start planting trees, you start thinking in years versus days. just the very act of playing. And I'm not talking about go down to Home Depot, buy a live oak, and put one lollipop tree in the center of your front yard like everybody else on the street. I'm talking about trees, plural, productive trees. And when I say productive, you could just say, I'm going to landscape this lot with gorgeous maples so the house is worth more. That's productive. Not what I would do, but it's, I'm mocking it. You know, red Japanese, purple Japanese maple. Like, that's an investment. Like, your home, especially in certain climates where those trees are beautiful, somebody pulls up and sees, like, purple Japanese and silver maples and some other stuff. Like, oh, wow. Versus one lollipop tree. Yeah. But I'm talking whether it's produce, fodder, some resource, long-term timber, whatever it is, when you start planting something that is going to produce for you in 5 years and then produce until you're dead and beyond, that alone, it's not just the value the trees bring to you, it's the value that the psychology brings to your future planting. When sometimes I walk around here, I've only been here 10 years, and I started putting some of the black locusts in, I guess, about 6-7 years ago. And some of those black locusts, you could make a ship's mast out of them now. Even here on this shitty property, I look at that tree. And for all the ones that died, the ones that live are worth the planting. I look at those trees now and I go, nothing can stop that tree. It's been through three of the worst droughts this area has ever known. I didn't irrigate it. It's still alive and growing. I know that tree will outlive me. Absent a tornado ripping it out of the ground or something. That changes how you think. Buy the best you can afford once versus cheap every few years. You know, I tell the story of the garden hose and talking about how you pick a garden hose based on a spreadsheet. What is the cost of the cheap hose for 2 years versus the good hose for 12 years? And people are like, you'll put something like that in a spreadsheet? Yes, and that's why I have money and you don't. Because it's not that. If it was only that, like, you got to look at it like your diet. If you eat well and exercise one day a week and eat garbage fast food the rest of the week, your life will not get any better. In fact, it will progressively get worse. You are wasting your time, honestly, eating healthy and exercising one day a week. You can't overcome six bad days with one good one. Conversely, not the best plan, but if you eat shit that you shouldn't eat and lay around on your ass and don't do anything one day a week, but you eat high-quality food 6 days a week and you exercise 6 days a week, your life will still get progressively better. You see how that works. So the same thing is, if you take one purchase a year and do what I just said with it, you will not economically improve your health. But if every purchase of anything significant goes under that analysis of price-to-value ratio, if you were to track it all over time and you were to say like, this saves me X, so now I have a commitment to take what it saved me because I was going to spend it anyway and do Y with it as investment forward, it can be over a human lifetime millions of dollars. Because that's how you save millions of dollars over 40 or 50 years. 10 bucks here, 20 bucks there, 50 bucks here, 100 bucks there, 500 bucks here. That's how you do that. And if you don't do that, then you only have yourself to blame, because who makes every decision in your life? You do. Now people say, no, I don't make decisions because government doesn't. You make the decision of how you react to everything that happens to you. You can make excuses or money, but not both. Pick one. And somebody will say something stupid. Every time I say something like it, people try to break it. They try to be like comic book guy in The Simpsons. Pleased to tell you that in episode 113, you get some stupid shit like that. Or they do the whole, it's not a clip, it's a magazine. Like anybody gives a fuck, right? Like, yes, I know that. I said clip. We all know what the fuck it meant. Or maybe I wasn't even talking about what you think I was talking about. Like, don't be that person. So I'll say you can make excuses for money, but not both of you. Politicians make excuses all the time. That's how they get rich. No, it's not. No. What politicians actually do is seek and acquire and hold power. They don't make any excuses when it comes to getting that done. They use excuses, leverage against your stupidity to get a thing done. The action item is the thing you cannot make excuses for. Say whatever you want about politicians, but they're good at acquiring, growing, and holding power. We have a Congress with like a 23% approval rating and a 90%+ reelection rating. They're very good at what they do. And I see some stuff here about locusts and thorns. I grow black locust. Black locusts have thorns. The bigger they get, the smaller the thorns get, the less they have. They're not a big deal. Honey locust, different story. Now, they do have thorns, and you do have to think about that. I will say that. The thorny thing I planted that I wish I didn't, and I probably never get rid of it now, are the jujubes. Those are the thorniest bitches. I mean, shoot, they're crown of thorns level thorny, and I get very little production out of them, and they sucker like crazy. Locusts, easy. Locusts are easy as long as you manage them. Moving on. Become highly skilled at fixing your own problems. Technical problems, physical problems, emotional problems, nutritional problems, health problems, all of it. Become highly skilled at it. Doesn't mean don't ever reach out and get some help. But what can you do versus relying on somebody else? Because one of the things in this isn't just the cost of the thing, but the cost of time. So there's two ways I look at the cost of time on a task. What could I do with that time to make money? And what does it cost for someone else to do it for me? And if it costs me less for someone else to do it for me, and I think I can do as good or a better job, I let somebody else do it. And I, I spend my time working on and in my business and growing my courses and all that other stuff. If I say to myself, I can make money by doing this, my next question is quality, right? If I'm going to look at it every day for the rest of my life and it's going to bug me if I don't get it right, and I'm probably not going to get it right, I get somebody else to do it. But there's another way to look at time. If this thing costs me money every day it's not working, and I don't have the time to fix it till Saturday and it's Monday, and somebody can fix it today and save me the lost capital in between Monday and Saturday, I'm paying somebody to fix it. You see how that works? Back when I used to work in underground construction, we had a directional boring machine down. The guys over at Vermeer Ditch, which were very expensive, but my crew sitting not working while I'm trying to fix the fucking thing was more expensive. That bitch went to Ditch Witch, got fixed, and went back to ditching witches because it was a financial decision. There's so many things in your life you need to look at that way. What is the cost of my inaction? You know, and if the cost of your inaction exceeds the cost of someone else doing it and you have the money, get it done. And if you're taking the responsibility yourself is profitable, then you do it that way. It's not emotional. You also have to look at what's the value of doing it and learning how to do it. If you're going to do a thing, it's probably the only time in your life you're ever going to have to do it. And so the knowledge gained by doing it, you can't think of a peripheral skill set it gives you. And now you had to know how to do this thing, but it's likely the case that once it's done, you'll never have to do it again. That's an ideal thing for someone that already knows how to do. If I'm going to do a thing and I gain the skill set of knowing how to do it, and it's something that's going to happen once a year for the next 20 years, I'm probably doing it because it's not a one-off expense. It's an annualized expense, and I don't like that unless I can make the other economic trade that it's going to take me. Maybe it's going to be a loss in year one. It's like you got to look at it. You're training yourself as an employee. This is a perfect way to look at it. If I hire a new employee, I don't care how that position is structured for me to make a living. If they've never done that job before in my environment, I will lose money on them for a month. At least. Maybe 2 weeks if they're really, really, really astute and good and really a go-getter. A lot of times it's 60 days. I make that loss investment in that employee because if they work for me for 5 years after that, you know, I get 4 years and 10 months of profitability. by and it's the same thing with your kids. When you teach your kid to do shit around the house, how to mow the lawn, fuck, that first time, you could have mowed the lawn 5 times. You could have just done it and been done with it and moved on. But now you got to do it next week or next other week, right? Every other week or whatever your frequency. You got to do it forever. But if you take a couple times and teach them to do it where you're not afraid they're going to break shit, and you say, Billy, go cut the grass, and Billy goes and cuts the grass, the investment returns. When it comes to doing things for yourself, your DIY stuff, if it's something like that, think of it like training an employee. Yes, I could go work in my business and I could make $500, right? And that's how much that's going to be. And if I go do this thing that I could pay somebody $200 or $250 for, it would be an obvious thing I should just work in my business and pay somebody. But this is going to be a regular thing. This needs to be done every 6 months, every year. No, I'm doing it because now I'm going, and it's not going to take me as long the second and third and fourth time. I'm going to get very efficient at it. And since now I know it's a regular thing, I'm going to be able to choose the time that I wouldn't be working in my business anyway, instead of breaking away from it. So I'll make that investment. See, this show is less about the steps and the rules, more about the thought process. That's what I want to get across to you. This is how rich people think. Now, I don't want to use the word rich. I don't like that word. This is how wealthy people think. Wealthy people, not rich people. And well, a rich person and a wealthy person can have the same amount of money. Very similar lives. Wealthy people think differently. Wealthy people can do well with less money than rich people can do with more money sometimes, because rich mindset and wealthy mindset are different. The best definition of wealth I've ever heard comes from Buckminster Fuller, who said, wealth is, if you take away all income, how many days forward can a person survive and be happy? If you can do that for 10 years, you have 10 years worth of wealth. It doesn't matter what the fuck that is in dollars or ounces of gold or satoshis. It doesn't matter. It's in the end, it's the same. Because if your grandfather had the 401k you have right now, many of you, you're sitting on 401ks, a few $100,000 in them. If your grandfather, when he was 40 years old in 1960, had your 401k, he could have retired. Right? Assuming he could have moved it somewhere without getting too dink. Let's say he ended up with $400,000 by the time he paid the government off. 401ks didn't even exist back then. Let's just say it did. And he could then put it into a decent investment model. It's a relatively conservative investment model. His cash would have grown and his income would have matched how much money he was making working. He could have gave himself a 20% raise over that and lived until he was old as shit and died. You can't. Why? Inflation. So he didn't have the amount of money you had. So you both probably had about the same amount of wealth, even though on paper, based on dollars being a scorecard, you were wealthier. How long can you survive forward on what you have without additional income? That is wealth. Look, Mr. Fuller, he was a genius, really, in so many ways. You need to also see opportunity everywhere, because it is everywhere. This is why I don't even want to talk to y'all that are like, I have an idea. I want to tell you about my idea. I don't give a fuck about your idea. It's not personal, right? And if it's my friend, if it's David, if it's Nicole, if it's somebody that I would have over to my house for dinner, especially impromptu, I'll probably listen to their idea because I'm just being a friend. I'm talking about these people that come up to me at conferences. I got this idea. I won't tell you about it. And then the guarantee that I'm going to tell you to go get screwed is, well, can you sign an NDA before I talk? No, I don't care about your idea. And the reason isn't that you might not have a good idea. You might. Well, go do something with it. Go do something with it. I'm not a consultant. That's not my thing. And it's very hard to get me to consult on anything because I don't like doing it. No, it's that I'm not short on ideas. I walk around, I'm like, I could do that, I could do that, I could do that. Yeah, here's a funny idea I had recently. If one of y'all want to run with it, go ahead. Right? You know, there's a whole market for gag gifts, and some of you are going to get really bent in the nose right now, and it's probably why you're poor, because you can't take a joke. But I call my grandson retarded all the time. Now, before you get all mad about that, we don't call people that we used to call retarded anymore. We call them mentally challenged. We call them autistic, special needs, whatever. So we don't even use that word to describe the people you're worried about offending anymore. So grow up and get with 2024. And retarded has more than one meaning, right? And when I call my grandson retarded, I tell him straight up, it's because you're smart, but you're behaving like you're stupid because you want to, or because you think it's funny, or because you're being lazy, or whatever it is. So I call him retarded. And I was like, you know what? I should get you some helmet polish and a crayon sharpener. And I had this idea. A gag gift site, it's a retard kit. And that's what's in it. Like, it's a crayon sharpener. It's like four corks for your forks so you don't stab yourself. And some helmet polish and some other stuff. I could put that together for like 10 bucks dropped and charge like 30 bucks for it. That's a 3X markup. And have a drop shipper, like a retard instruction booklet, how to communicate with those that are not retarded, written at the retard level or something. It doesn't even matter what's inside there. All the pages could be blank. And like, you know what? That could actually probably make some money. Why won't I do it? Because I have 1,000 ideas like that. And my buddy David said, I don't have a hair on my ass if I don't do that after thinking about it. But, you know, that's just how stupid is that? How stupid is that? But you want to know how you can actually get rich with that thinking? Look up a website. And this guy's getting free advertising right now. Remember last week I was wearing a shirt and John Willis said he's going to rip it off. And I said, go ahead. And it was the fuck around and find out diagram. All it was a diagram over the breast. And it had like fuck around and find out and the line going up the middle, right? Remember that? That was given to me by my nephew that I mentioned a couple times today. He knows the guy that owns the site that it comes from. The site's called Assholes Live Forever. I'm going to say it again. Assholes Live Forever. ALF. And he has all kinds of like hot chicks wearing t-shirts and shit on it. It's all stupid fucking crap. The guy lives and works out of Mexico. He makes a fucking mint. And he makes up complete bullshit. Look, Hogs knows the guy. He says, yep, in Mexico, right? Okay, see, he knows who I'm talking about. This dude's well known. He's all over Instagram and shit like that. And it's all stupid shit. And he makes up total crap. He made up some sale Nick was telling me about a couple of months ago about, you know, his girlfriend left him, his wife divorced him or something, and it put him in a bad way, and he needed to liquidate all this shit. Ain't nobody left him. It's just bullshit. And people know, and he goes out and says it's bullshit, and people buy his crap anyway. Look, if a dude can make money on nonsense like that with a website called Assholes Live Forever, opportunity literally is everywhere. And it's simple, but it ain't easy. Simple but not easy. Most of y'all know my story, and I'm not going to retell the whole thing now about how I started Survival Podcasts. But the way I started Survival Podcasts does not begin with on June 20th, 2008, I got in my car and did my first podcast. That's where the podcast begins. The story of how I became the person that was able to start a podcast in a car in 2008 and be full-time with it in 18 months. And honest to God, I could have done it in 6, but my business partner asked me to stay. And at 1 year, I was ready to leave again, and he asked me to stay for 6 more months. He had been so good to me, I did that. So I could have walked in 6 months. I was at a point where I could have walked. That story begins with when I was 13 years old, and my grandfather was teaching me how to garden. And there's a lot of shit in between. There's working for Muskrat Purcell in the junkyard. There's working at the turkey farm, cleaning the kill floor. There's working as a bootlegger with my father in a coal mine. There's joining the army. There's getting out of the army. There's working in a warehouse. There's sleeping in the back of my truck when I got my first good job because it wasn't really that good. It was an experience job, not a money job. And saving money by sleeping in my truck versus using the money they gave me for a hotel. And it keeps going. So if you said to me, Jack, how do I become a podcaster that can build what you've built? And I said, well, the first thing you do is get your grandfather when you're 13 years old and say, teach me how to garden. And you start going hunting when you're 13 years old, and you run a trap line when you're 15. And I went through the whole thing. You'd say, that is the dumbest fucking thing I've ever heard in my life. The answer is you're correct. You have life experience up till now, and you don't dictate what you had, but you dictate what you do with it going forward. It's all very simple, but ain't none of it easy. Being a fucking 16-year-old kid on your hands and knees on concrete scrubbing out a trench full of turkey guts is not easy. Choosing to do it when you don't have to. You know, I wasn't like saving up money so my sister could have an operation. I wanted more than I had, and that was one way to get it. It ain't easy. Knowing your friends are all sitting in the woods drinking Yingling with the pretty girl you like and you're scrubbing turkey vomit is not easy. It's incredibly simple. There's nothing complicated about it. It's still not easy. If you have too much easy in your life and you haven't earned it yet, you're not going anywhere. Easy is to be earned. Instead, we use easy to get in the way of earning. Don't let it happen. You know, see opportunity everywhere. Assholes live forever. If that jackass can make money, anybody can. I mean, anybody can. Become a great cook. I talk about that a lot. I love cooking. I do whole shows on cooking. Why? It's a life skill. You got people, they think they cook because they microwave water and dump it on ramen. That's not cooking. Go to Instagram, watch some of these people that think they're chefs. They throw Campbell's soup in the thing and dump fucking onion powder and garlic powder in it and talk about spices. They're fucking morons. Learn how to cook. I won't go deeper than that. Just saying, if you can cook food that if you went out to eat would cost you $100 and you didn't have 20 bucks into it, you put 80 bucks in your pocket. Because you got the experience without the money. And I don't mean the experience of cooking. I mean the meal experience. I mean, sometimes I spend a lot of money cooking, but I give an experience. I have friends over. We sit out there in that outdoor kitchen that I worked my ass off so I could have, and we go five courses of meals. I have $200 in it. But if we went to a restaurant, it would have been $800, and we would have gotten at least, you know, less than half the food. Because instead of like six scallops each, big giant ones, we would have got two. Instead of two lobster tails, we would have got a half of one. And here I'm talking about saving money and building wealth, and I'm talking about eating lobster and scallop eventually. Because, boy, I'll tell you what, I ate a lot of chicken when I was young, guys. Chicken and stovetop stuffing and potatoes. If I could go back in time, I would teach young Jack Spirico, you could probably have been a lot better off in your life if you didn't eat the stuffing and potatoes. But it's what I knew, and what I knew was saving money. I never bought chicken in pieces and parts or pre-cooked. I bought the biggest, cheapest whole chickens I could get, and I broke them down. Hell, I knew how to butcher a duck or a grouse. A chicken's just a big one of those. I knew how to butcher a turkey. It's just a small turkey. I made stock. I rendered fat. Like, I did all this shit that I talk about now when I was in my 20s, living alone in my shitty apartment in Grand Prairie, Texas, because it benefited me in the future. I was as stupid as I was smart enough to think that way. I want to live really good. You know, growing up poor helped. My dad was never poor, but we lived like we were because he was cheap. Like, I am frugal. My father to this day is cheap as fuck. He lives like he ain't got it. He lives like a homeless man with a house. He's worth a fucking fortune. I don't want to be that. But most of my family was poor. My grandparents were poor. Grandfather was a coal miner that retired early from black lung. You don't get much worse than that. We had a garden because we needed it for food. We hunted because we needed it for food. But because of that, I learned skills. I learned skill sets that were directly related to my quality of life. Because what my family did that was sad that they did so was accept poverty. They really did. I'm talking like my grandparents and my great uncles and all. They just accepted. We live here in this little hamlet in Pennsylvania. It's beautiful, but there's not a lot of opportunity. And the best you can hope for is a job working swing shift at Cressona Aluminum for $13 an hour, which was good money back then, by the way. But that was a pinnacle. You got a job at the brewery, the aluminum factory, or the concrete place. You know, other than that, you worked at the economy grocery store or some shit like that, or the Exxon plant or whatever, you know, making material in a Van Heusen mill or something. Like, it just wasn't no money to be made. And instead of thinking other ways, they said, how can we take what we have, which is fertile soil in a beautiful place where lots of things grow, where lots of wildlife is, and live like we're rich in poverty? Imagine what would have happened if those people had said, how do we live like we're wealthy while we build wealth? Do you understand how important the questions you ask yourself are? There's a 3-pound hunk of mostly fat in your bone skull called the brain. Even in a stupid person, it is the most powerful computer in the known world. Fuck the known universe to us. I'm sure other things know other things in other places. But to us, we have not ever seen a computer that can compare it to the human brain. The most advanced AI shit in the world that occupies 5 times the space of my house. For all of the recall of information it can do, it doesn't do anything without a person. And it can't really make decisions. And it can't really discover new things without somebody prodding it and making it do calculations. Your brain can. Your brain can do something that seems simple, which is, I need to jump from here to there and clear this thing. And it can do an incredibly complex mathematical problem in microseconds so that when you jump, you land where you want to. Robots ain't there yet, guys. So when you ask yourself a question or you make a definitive statement, you're writing code into that computer. Garbage in, garbage out. Good code in, good results out. Stop writing shitty code in your brain. Please. Pay off all your debt. I know I said that earlier. I'm going to say it again here at the end because, God, it's so important. It's cancer. It will eat away at you. It will never go away. You got to get rid of it. Especially those of you with student debt that's been around so long, you might as well name it and call it a pet. You got to get rid of it. It was a bad investment. Dave Ramsey and I don't agree on a lot of things, but I do like one of his terms, stupid tax. Some of the decisions you've made in the past, you just look at it as stupid tax. Pay the stupid tax and get out from underneath it, and you'll learn so much from that that by the time you get out from underneath it, your building has already really started. And become adept at using Excel. You can go take, I'll look it up. It isn't in this episode, but I bet you I can find it. There's an entire like college level course starting from ground zero all the way up to things I didn't even know how to do when I took it. And I know some Excel. I mean, I ran sales forces, 30, 40 people. I ran businesses with 2,500 contractors. I built Excel spreadsheets for things that nothing existed to do what needed to be done with numbers. And so I thought, I'm like Excel ninja, man. Like Yoda, the Excel of Yoda of Excel ain't got shit on me. Hell, there were a lot of things I knew how to do, but there were easier ways to do them, faster ways to do them, because since I self-taught, right, I didn't necessarily learn properly. Learn how to use Excel. It never lies. Now, it's numbers in, numbers out. You put stupid numbers in, you get stupid numbers out. But if you put real numbers in with the right formula, when you want to know something, Excel tells you the truth. Excel has no emotions. Right? And when I say Excel, spreadsheets, just, you know, Microsoft Excel has a million tutorials available. If you're on like, what is it, Numbers on Mac, okay, do that. But, and maybe it's just I've used Excel for so long, but a lot of things in Numbers, I'm like, what the hell? Like I can import this spreadsheet I made in Excel, but actually designing it, it's just a different. There's some things that are different, right? Whatever works for you. But if you're able to actually make decisions with real data, there was another thing we had recently, and somebody said something to my wife about that and said, oh, Jack puts everything in a spreadsheet, right? And I don't manage our entire life that way. If we're going to go out to lunch on a Friday afternoon after the kids are gone early, I don't put that in a spreadsheet. But when I'm deciding what to do with my life, that's going to be a long-term consequence. Yeah. Yeah. And we should be doing that with everything. You got a young person getting ready to go to college and they're going to borrow 30 grand a year for 4 years. It's $120,000. And they're not going to take and make a financial model to see if that investment makes sense. And you get mad when somebody says that they should. Do you love your kids or are you full of shit? See, I know what you do, right? I just upset some people. That's my job, especially on a, if I'm going to talk about wealth and I ain't pissing you off, I ain't doing my job. But the problem is that so many people, when it comes to their kids, they have misdirected love. And what I mean by that is you form this idea of what your child's life should be like. And then because you love them, you do everything to funnel them into that idea. I'm sorry. You're confused. There is a person that you get to do that with. Go to your fucking bathroom, look in the mirror. That's the one you get to make those decisions for. You can guide and help your children along, but by the time they're up to that age, you need to be as hands-off as you can, right? Because when they ask for help, you should help to make decisions and all. But they're an adult. Your job is not to raise children. That's not your job as a parent. You don't raise children as a parent, right? Like you talked yesterday about you took the worms and put them in the box. They didn't ask to go in the box, so now you got to take care of the box. Your kids aren't worms or bees. You don't put them in a box. What is a grown child referred to as? An adult. It's very hard for us to look at an 18, 19-year-old, 20-year-old when we're 50 and not call them a kid. I understand. I do it all the time. And I constantly am correcting myself. You know, I'll be talking about my nephew. And somebody will talk about him with like a friend or someone. I'll say, he's a good kid. I'm like, oh, he's 27 years old. He's 27 years old and he's a fucking assistant attorney general. I'm calling him a kid. I'm being disrespectful. Don't be disrespectful of your kids, your actual children. You're raising adults. That's your job as a parent, to raise adults. You understand me? You're raising adults. We are co-parenting our grandchildren with their parents, my son and my daughter-in-law. And I, all the time, we're not raising children. I tell them that. My granddaughter's 7. I tell her, a 7-year-old little girl, I tell her that. My job is to raise an adult. That adult will eventually be you. Your grandma's job is to raise you to an adult. Your daddy's job, your mommy's job. You might always be their little girl, but you're also going to be a woman. And if by the time you get to that destination, you're not capable of doing it, we failed you. And I refuse to fail you, and that's why I make you do things you don't want to do. Damn, I wish somebody would have said that shit to me when I was a kid. You know, I ain't saying I would have got further, but I might have got there quicker. That's the opportunity. If you're a young parent right now, that's the fucking opportunity you have, to have that conversation many times with your child between now and the fact in the future they'll still be your kid, but they won't be a child anymore if you do your job right. Do you have an 18-year-old that doesn't know how to pay bills? You failed. At least in that aspect. You have an 18-year-old that can't assess a financial decision on their own? You failed. You have an 18-year-old that can't cook beyond making a sandwich? You failed. And if you did it already, it is what it is. You can't go back and fix it. Be there for them in whatever capacity you can now. If you're halfway to that point and you feel like you're behind, you got plenty of time. If you're still changing diapers, already start thinking that way. I'm wiping this baby's ass right now, but I'm raising an adult. Next step, teach them to wipe their own ass. That's a big graduation day. Any parent, right, that's ever had to deal with changing diapers, one of the greatest days in your life. I made pee-pee. I made poo-poo. I wiped my own booty. Right? Like, woohoo! Right? Okay. Everything in life is like that. Always going up toward adulthood. Yeah. Final thoughts. In the famous words of a now deceased but brilliant thinker and comedian, George Carlin, it's a big club, and you're not in it. the world of the elite, the mega rich, the bureaucratic class, the parasitic class, the oligarchs, the upper echelon media, you're not in it, and you don't want to be. It's a big club, and you're not in it. But here's the Spirko version. But you can still win the game. See, the thing is, those people get to a point where they crave more money and more power so much it destroys their very soul. I've said it before, but if someone came to me as a benefactor and say, Jack, you've made my life and my family's life better, and I am fucking rich, I'd be like, well, good for you. Now you're like, you don't understand. I'm a multi-billionaire. Here's $1 million. My first instinct would be to say, man, I can't take that. But like, you're a multi-billionaire? Yeah. Fuck, thank you. You know what? Here's $2 million. Shit. Jackistan's getting really close. Jack, do you want a Jackistan? Give me that $2 million back. Here's $10 million check. Holy shit. And if I really didn't think it was going to hurt this person, yeah, I'd probably take the money. But there is a point where I'd say, that's it. And it ain't about what you're giving up. I only want so much. I only want so much. And I only need so much that when I'm gone, I leave behind enough for the people I leave behind. And it's up to them to pay that forward. And there's the point where you're like, if you say, look, you either take $500 million or you don't get any, I'm probably going to give away $450 million. I'm going to spend the rest of my life doing it, investing in the places that I see as worthy. There are people, if you gave them $500 million, all they would think is, how do I get to $600 million? And I think people like that are broken. I think they're sick. And I don't mean like, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're cutting people's heads off and mounting pig heads on them or something, right? Or dropping something down in a pit and telling them to put the lotion on. But I think they're sick as humans, that they're not being true to what a human really is. That something snaps, they become addicted to power, money, and or both. And so you don't want to be in that club anyway, because you'll stop being human. What you want is to never worry about whether or not you're going to pay your bills and have leisure time with your family and your friends. To be able to do the things you want to do when you want to do them. It's not as hard as people have led you to believe it is, especially if you're young. I'll tell you what, a lot of you young people, there's a lot of 50-year-olds that would switch places with you right now. You can have their house and all their shit if they could have your age. Because your age is what you'll never get back. You will never be younger ever again for the rest of your life than you are this second, in this moment, right now. We will all lose the battle with entropy in the end as to age. You'll be older tomorrow than you are today. You might be wiser, but that day is gone. No matter how long you're going to live, it's one less. Your dash is short. Make the most of it. With that, I hope you enjoyed today's show. I know I did. And I think I've made a decision that this will be the last new show of the week. I'm just going to work my ass off for the rest of the day so I can spend Wednesday with my wife and my grandkids before I go out of town. Some of this discussion made me realize that's a priority that I want to have right now. And let that be a lesson, too. Like, why can I do that? Because I put 16 years in this. That's why I have the backlog and the ability to do something like that. So sorry there won't be another new one or an expert panel this week. But leading by example sometimes is important. So that's what I'm going to do here. I also want to let you guys know, you know, we talked about not spending too much money today, but I also think when you spend money, spending less to get more is a good thing. And that's why I've been really enjoying working with Vavor since they reached out to me and we established this new relationship. Well, I got an email from my rep there this morning, and this is pretty cool. They have a sale going on right now. They have up to 60% off a ton of things. Now, a lot of stuff's down 15, 17, 25%, but some stuff's 60% off. Some stuff's on clearance. Some of the pricing is just stupid cheap. And, yes, you can still get an additional 5% off with my discount code. If you go to the Survival Podcast right now and scroll down, you'll see this post that I have here on the screen if you're watching it. If not, it'll be in today's show notes. It'll be on the site. It'll be in today's Daily Mail and everything. I put it out on social already. But you can get over there, see all the stuff they have. And like on one of the sections, the New Deals More Savings section I have featured here, when I clicked see more, it was like 11 pages of stuff. And when I say Vavor has everything, I mean everything. And there's a lot of cool shit. I'm really enjoying working with them. And then real quick, my item of the day today, is the same one as yesterday. It's the worm composter. She's the rep that wrote me this morning said y'all bought like about 30 of them yesterday. So clearly it's hit with y'all. No reason to change that, especially on a short week. It is a great product. It's a $100 product for $60. It's $40 back in your pocket. Plus you're making high quality worm compost. So I'll leave that at that today. I don't want to push you to spend money too much on a whole show that had a lot to do with not spending money you don't need to spend, but make the investment in stuff. Buy the same quality or better for less money. That's my bonus tip for you today. Again, it'll be a rewind tomorrow and Thursday, a Friday flashback, which is a different kind of rewind on Friday. It'll be an interview. And then I'll be back Monday, and hopefully I'll be recharged. I think I've done a good job the past couple of weeks of podcasting. I don't feel like I've been off my game or off my timing or lacked passion or anything like that. But I've been in a little bit of a funk. And I guess I'm Mike Pence or who was it? Was it? I don't know who had the fly on him, but I just had to fly on me there. I've just like not been when I'm not working, like in a great mood. And I think there's just times when things have gone long enough without going and doing anything really radically different that I kind of need a reboot. And I think getting on down to Bastrop will be great. I'm still waiting to hear from John. I'm going to have to ping his ass again about the farm tours on Thursday. But if you're going to be on the farm tours, I'll be on at least one of them. I just don't know which one it's going to be. Like I said, I'm going to get out of here ass crack at dawn Thursday morning and go hang out with some really cool people. That event is always great. It's last minute, but if you want to come to Bastrop, there's still time. And remember, hey, free is cheap, right? It ain't cheaper than free. Cheap's an okay word when you're not using it to be a cheapskate. And if you get over to John's site, and you can find a link on my website and the banner on my website right up near the top for the Exit and Build event, you can sign up and you can basically get all of the presentations for no cost. Then there's a virtual upgrade for some additional features, or you can attend in person. But you can get most of the presentations, I'm pretty sure, including mine, for free, just by signing up there and getting on his newsletter and what have you. Anyway, with that, take care. I'll catch you guys Monday with more. I'm gonna bail you out or just run you around. They said you should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.